On July the 4th, the US turns 250 years, from settlers to establishing a nation to becoming the global superpower and to what now appears to be an empire in decline. Now, the United States in its short history has left its mark, but it remains to be seen in the longer timeline of history, if the US will take its place amongst the preeminent civilizations. And here to help navigate this very important discussion is none other than Adnan Khan, the founder of Geopolity. Adnan, hope you're well.
I'm well, Imran. Hope you're doing well as well.
Yep, very well. Thank you. I want to remind everyone that you can find us on all the major social media platforms where you can subscribe and never miss anything. So Adnan, on America's 250th birthday, the semi-quincentennial birthday, a word that I would never have thought of using before, where does US stand at this present stage?
So 250 years ago, a group of revolutionaries got together, they established a nation, and the nation was built upon unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was 250 years ago. 252 years later, things are not looking so good. In fact, even the semi-quincentennial birthday, the 250th anniversary, there are differences between everyone in America. There's differences on the past, the history of America. The Americans differ on the current state of America, and they are even divided over the future of America. So on the 250th birthday, the Americans are very uncertain about their future. Probably the most critical thing on this birthday is the US of A has slaughtered nearly all of its sacred cows. When it comes to freedom of speech, it's been completely silenced by Zionism. When it comes to the right to protest, something quite central to American history, it's only allowed if it's not against Zionism or Israel. America was this melting pot where immigrants come and anybody can make it. Now you have the DEI who is literally expelling people and forcing people to leave the country. International law, the system America established after World War II, has been completely undermined. Last year, Lindsey Graham openly said, when people were calling for the arrest of the Israeli leaders for committing a genocide, he said that the Rome Statute that established international law, it wasn't designed to come after a selection of countries. And he mentioned all the white countries. So it wasn't actually designed for them, it was designed for the third world. This is the situation on the 250th birthday. And to make matters worse, the American empire has now reached a point where they don't know whether they're coming or going. They're making contradictory laws. So to give you one example, last May, Marco Rubio announced a new law where they were going to introduce a new visa policy that would prevent people entering the US who were critical of Israel. He did this about midday. Then about 6 o'clock in the evening, he passed another law that will prevent foreign nationals who have been involved in censoring free speech. This is the situation America's in. The other thing you find is, look, America is governing. America is managing. But there's no inspiration. There's no forward-looking vision. And I would say on the 250th birthday, the US is actually looking more and more like the USSR.
Briefly, can you explain, Adnan, how did the US become such a, you know, such a global superpower? You know, how did it become to be the empire that we know it as?
So there's the fairy tale story, and then there's the reality of what happened. So the Disney version goes a bit like this: that oppressed Christian Protestants from England, from Scotland, from Ireland, from Germany, Italy, Holland, they crossed the Atlantic in search of freedom and liberty. They came as immigrants. Through their belief in God, they established a new nation with a constitution that established unalienable rights for man. They were destined to spread their rule and their presence throughout the whole Northern American continent, and this came to be known as Manifest Destiny. Then through hard work, through foresight and belief, they built industry, they built wealth, they created a lot of wealth, and they created a place where anybody could come and succeed. What they established was a unique melting pot where anyone with any belief could come and settle there and actually prosper. They promoted this idea that the US was not like the imperial Europeans. They didn't believe in imperial endeavors around the world. They just believed in trade and maintaining good relations. And then World War II happened and the US became the accidental superpower. It was the last man standing. It didn't run the role, but destiny chose them. That's the Disney version that you get. The reality is very different.
It's the Pocahontas. If you watch that, you'll get the what you just basically said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, most nations, empires, they create a narrative. And the narrative is usually the complete opposite of what happened on the ground. So you usually get a fairy tale story of struggle, of destiny, and how people came together. And it's very rarely like that. And the American story is like that as well. But the real story is the oppressed Protestants that came to America, they came as settlers. They came as colonists. They didn't come to some empty place in the world. They came to a North American culture that already had Red Indians who were organized by nations. So they didn't come to some empty land. There's already people there. So they had a problem straight away. When they looked at the indigenous people, they saw them speak a different language. They didn't recognize the spiritual beliefs that they had. So they saw them as inferior and barbaric. So what they proceeded to do was, as America expanded across the North American continent, they carried out ethnic cleansing. They carried out a genocide. And they called this Manifest Destiny. And it gets worse. The Americans didn't want to work in the fields in the hot weather. So what they did was they used slaves from the Caribbean, slaves from Africa. And when the United States was created, there was a bit of a problem. The southern states, they had a lot of slaves. So if all these slaves got rights, then when it came to the House of Representatives, the southern states would all be dominant. So in the end, a compromise was then made between the northern states and the southern states when they created the United States of America. This is the original 13 states. What they agreed was a slave is subhuman. They agreed that a slave is subhuman and he or she will only be 60% of a normal man. This was how they viewed slavery. And then we have to keep in mind, Philippines and Cuba, both of these were colonized by America. America occupied both, it dominated over them. So despite all this talk of we're not like the Europeans, actually they weren't really different. And then the final thing is when America became this accidental power, which is quite hilarious. You don't become accidentally a superpower in the world. What happened was in World War I, when America helped the Europeans in their continental war, the Americans wanted to play a global role, but Congress and the American public, they didn't want that. In fact, for most of America's history, they've been quite isolationist, that America should engage in trade and diplomacy, but it shouldn't do what the Europeans do. By the time World War II came about, the Middle East oil had come up on the radar. American policymaking, the elite, wanted America to play a more global role. So when Pearl Harbor happened, that was used as a justification to intervene. And then, as we know, America established the global liberal order. So the real story is very different to the fairy tale story. And yeah, after 1945, after World War II, America has been the global superpower.
So World War II has happened. The US has become this global superpower literally overnight. What would you say are the key things that has allowed the US to maintain this position since World War II?
So people would usually say, you know, political, economic, military strength. These are the things that make you a power. And that is true. But I think with America, they established a number of institutions and structures which really cemented their global power. So yes, America was the last man standing after World War II. Europe was completely devastated. The Far East was devastated because of 5 years of war. So yes, America was the last man standing. And as a result, America was able to enforce upon the Europeans and the world a new architecture where America would be at the center. So America established the global liberal order. It established international law. And as Lindsey Graham has now told us, well, international law wasn't supposed to apply on America. They established the IMF and the World Bank, which became the key financial blocks that everybody had to abide by. They established NATO. And then during the Cold War, America was able to force people into their bloc. America also established the petrodollar. Now, why is this key? It's key because America made its currency the global standard. So America prints a currency and the whole world needs it. This is why America is able to put sanctions on other countries, because the sanctions mean you are not allowed to get access to the US dollar. which is the global currency. So global oil, global commodities, global agriculture, it's all priced in dollars. And then the other thing was America established agent rulers. So these are lackeys, these are vassal states who acted as forward bases for America. So if you look at Egypt, if you look at Pakistan, if you look at Iran, these became like arms of America in different regions of the world that aided American policy in these regions. So when you put these all together, these are the institutions that structured that gave America the power.
So as you said, you know, everything was going well for the American empire. They've ended up beating the Soviet Union, winning the Cold War. Post-Cold War, things don't seem to be going as well as planned. What went wrong?
So 1991, nobody thought it was possible. The Soviet Union crumbled, the Soviet Union collapsed, and America went from the victor to now trying to work out how should the world look. America is the global superpower by far. Nobody else can compete with it. And throughout the 90s, what you find was various policy positions were contemplated. So one of the key things that came out was the 20th century was the American century. And what America wanted to ensure, the 21st century would also be the American century as well. And what you saw during this era was the emergence of the neocons, the neoconservatives. And what they were talking about was, forget the global liberal order, forget the United Nations, forget international law. We are the superpower by far. We should just shape the world because we are just the most powerful. So what they concluded was, is we should just use America's power to impose on the rest of the world. We don't need to be nice about it. We don't need to abide by the rules that we set down because we are the global power. So what you find is at the end of 1990s, during the Bush administration, a lot of these neocons went on to take on key positions. And one of the key things we now know that they were thinking, because General Wesley Clark, he, in his book in the late 2000s, he wrote that after 9/11, the Pentagon informed him that their plan was to invade 5 or 6 Muslim countries. So the American strategy became that we are going to use our military to create regime change in primarily Muslim countries, and that is the best use of American power. So America had at its disposal lots of soft power, had Hollywood, had the American dream, had the free market, had democracy. Everybody wanted to be American. Everybody loved American movies. And what America's policymakers come up with is the best use of American power is to use our military and force what America wants on the world. And Iraq and Afghanistan was a result of that, and they became complete disasters. The invasions were a disaster, and American regime building was also a bigger disaster as well. But what we saw is America had the peace dividend in the 1990s. In the 2000s, what we see is Guantanamo Bay. What we see is international law undermined. And what we see is the US did what all empires have done in history, which is for power, they trampled over everything they had been propagating. So during the Cold War, America always said, we are fighting godless communism. We have a better system. We have better values. We have a way of life which is better for the whole world. That's what happened during the Cold War. After Cold War, it was just raw power. And what you saw was America trampled over everything that they had been promoting after World War II. So this is why things have gone wrong. What America's done and what the empire did is at the peak of our power, rather than standing up for what you believe in, rather than abiding by what you're propagating, they did the complete opposite. And that's why what's happened to them is exactly what's happened to every other empire in history.
Today, around the world, many, including Americans and you know themselves, they believe that America is in sheer decline. How does the US, or what do you think the US needs to do in order to navigate out of this decline?
So the plan is actually not just wild. The plan that the Americans have is actually, it's just bonkers. And you've seen the first part of it. The first part is the tariffs that we're seeing. The main issue is America's got to deal with a couple of things. It's not self-sufficient, so it has to deal with that. It's manufacturing. Most of it is abroad, so it needs to bring it back. The US isn't resource rich, so it needs to get resources. And China poses an economic and tech challenge. So Donald Trump and the guys around him, they've come up with a plan to deal with this. And the plan is just complete bonkers. The first part of the plan we've seen is about tariffs. So the tariffs are designed to force US companies and others to relocate production back to mainland America. And what they call is they call this the reindustrialization of America. And the plan is by doing that, by becoming self-sufficient, you'll be able to compete with China. Phase two is about acquiring resources, primarily oil, gas, critical minerals, rare earth minerals. Now, most of these are not in the United States of America, but they're found in the Americas. They're found in Latin America. They're found in Greenland. That's why you're hearing a lot about Greenland. So the national security document that came out last year, it sets out creating Fortress America, and that's where Greenland and all these countries come into it. So the aim here is to secure the resources of America for American companies and to deprive these from China. The third phase is that the world should buy oil and gas and precious minerals from America, which will ensure dollar hegemony. So the attacks we're seeing on Venezuela, on potentially Cuba, on Venezuela, on the GCC, Iran, this conflict is in order to try and aid this transition. So America's already the world's largest oil producer. Now, this is shocking because 15, 20 years ago, America was a major consumer. The fourth and probably the final part of this strategy is to destroy the post-World War II global order and reintroduce neocolonialism via technology. And if you look at Palantir's 21-point manifesto, it provides you a preview of this, where they will use their data to run the public sector in most of the world. So the global liberal order, it served America by creating a bloc that was better than the Soviet bloc. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, this global order only works if China joins it. And China's been very clear, they've got no problem working with the global liberal order, but they don't plan to follow its values. So that's why, from America's perspective, the global liberal order doesn't serve its agenda anymore, because China's not part of it. That's why they're ripping up. So this is the grand plan. I think it's just complete bonkers if you actually think about it, but that's the plan that they have.
So let's for a second ignore the fact that it's a, you know, it's a really out there plan. What's on paper? You know, US goes ahead with it. I think the question that's kind of coming to my mind now is, can it bear the costs of sustaining the empire?
So let's put this in a bit of context. All empires go through this. You grow, you expand, you then have to maintain occupation, you have to bear the costs. However, the reward that you get is way more. You're profitable. So the cost of the empire is just completely outweighed by the amount of wealth, resources, and access that you get. However, what you find is as time goes by, there's less and less resources. It's more costly to maintain your colonies, but they bring in less and less profit for you. So what happens is eventually you get to a point where the costs are much higher than the benefits you're getting. So all empires go through this, and this is where they have to make some changes. So what tends to happen is most empires will get rid of or no longer do things that are no longer profitable. The problem when empires do this is if you created structures to get powerful, and now you're uprooting those structures, it indicates to everybody else you're not as powerful anymore. So if you look at America, the empire is literally too costly. America has a GDP, economic value of $32 trillion. The national debt now is $39 trillion. The debt is more than the economy. America now pays over $1 trillion just in interest repayments to maintain that debt. So now, if you look at the debt, the amount of money going towards debt, the amount of money that's going towards the empire. So in America's case, we're talking about its foreign military bases, its presence, maintaining the architecture. That now means that money isn't going into education. It's not going into healthcare. It's not going into infrastructure. This reality is what led to the emergence of the MAGA movement, that we need to put America first. This is why Americans are saying today, what is the point of empire? What do I get out of empire when I can't feed my children, I can't send them to college? So America is just in the same position as every other empire has been in. And it is debatable. Does the empire serve the American people? It serves some elites. It serves the big corporates. Your average American, what, 330-ish million Americans, what do they physically get out of it? What they find is their taxpayers' money is all being used to maintain this empire abroad when they are barely making ends meet. So I don't think they can bear the cost of the empire, because every empire that went through this eventually collapsed.
You mentioned China. I think this is a two-part question. Do you see China replacing the US? And the second part is, why hasn't China replaced the US, especially in the position both of the countries are in?
So yes, China can potentially replace the US. China, we've seen in my lifetime, I was born in 1979, the same year China did its opening reform. And at that time, 90% plus of China's population lived in poverty. They were so poor that the Chinese government would subsidize bicycles and fans. That's how poor the Chinese public were. That's not the case anymore. What you find here, China has economically developed. China is becoming a tech leader. And China is now saying some things about the world. It talks about the things it doesn't like. The reason why it's not going to replace America for the moment is, what is China's vision for the world? What is China's ambition for the world? How should the world look? So China believes there shouldn't be a hegemon. China believes that there should be multiple powers in the world that balance each other out. China doesn't have some ideological call for the world. It doesn't have some message that people can subscribe to. China, in many ways, is not even necessarily nationalistic from a number of perspectives. So at the moment, China is so focused on internal. This is why America still remains the dominant power. Now, that obviously can change. Americans, for at least half of their history, were isolationist. They believe America shouldn't play an imperial role in the world. But that changed. When generations come and they see that they're a power and they should be taken seriously. So I think China has the potential, has the capacity to replace America. I don't think that's going to happen for the moment, though. And that's not due to economic, technological, military reasons. It's actually, look, China has been a power in its history. It's never been a global power. It's never like ruled or controlled or influenced multiple regions in different continents around the world. It's never done that. You could argue China technically lives on a continent in itself. But if you look at America, America's involved in Europe, America's involved in Africa, America's involved in Central Asia, in the Middle East, in the Far East. You don't see that with China. China, yeah, it's involved economically, it trades. But China isn't saying a region should be like this. China isn't getting involved in conflicts. It's not trying to resolve conflicts. It's not creating agent rulers. So I think until that doesn't happen, I can't see China replacing it. But what we may see, yeah, is just America self-implode. You're seeing that with Trump, what America is doing. So it's not, can China replace America by China superseding America? What you might find is America might just self-destruct because of the way its politics is, because of how divided they are, because of the differences they have. And this is why it's not surprising you're seeing so many movies being made on civil war in America. That's where America is at the moment.
Adnan, the US possesses, you know, the most capable of armies in the history of mankind, some would argue. But as we have seen with Iran and previously with Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam, it can't seem to be winning wars. What does this mean for its future?
So what this means is America as an empire now has come to a point where it's struggling to win wars. In fact, it's regularly losing wars. And one of the reasons why this is America's now being overstretched by countries that are using low tech, or they're using platforms that is overstretching America. So we saw this in the case of Iran. You're seeing now that America kept its navy out of the Gulf because it would have got a hit. The Iranians used ballistic missiles and drones, and not very sophisticated drones, to take out America's radar. So that was America's ears and eyes were completely gone. As a result, America wasn't able to carry out a full air campaign. Otherwise, it would have lost a lot of servicemen. And remember, this ain't the first war America lost. In my lifetime, I remember Iraq and Afghanistan. These were complete disasters. The funny thing is look, war is supposed to be politics through other means, and it's supposed to be a large resort when everything else fails. So there was a time where America had a lot of soft power. So it had Hollywood, it had the American Dream, free markets, democracy. The whole world wanted this. You know, America defeated the communist ideology not by a war, but by consumerism, Americanism, Westernism, if it's such a thing. That's how they won. But what you're finding now is in order to win wars, America's not winning them militarily. And what we're finding is America's contradicting all the sacred cows it believes in. So we've seen them do torture. You're seeing America defend and contradict their values when it comes to Zionism. The deal they've made with Iran now, this is the country that was saying, and the leader of this country was saying, Iran has to give up its nukes, no uranium enrichment, and Iran has to stop supporting proxy groups and just capitulate. And what we've seen is the complete opposite. In fact, we've now seen Trump agree to a $300 billion fund that Iran will use to reconstruct its country after the war. What we're finding now is rather than America presenting a visionary future, all it's got now is America first. This is the situation America's in. And the problem is if you view every political issue through the lens of we are going to war our way through it, well, this is exactly what the neocons did in the early 2000s with Iraq and Afghanistan. And what you find was they lost those wars and the Taliban are back in power. So, you know, this is where America is now. It's at the stage of the empire where why are you not scared of us? When we say jump, why are you not jumping? Now, no longer does America have some visionary thing to give you. It doesn't have a way of life to give you. It's not telling you about a future. Let's build it and let's live together. Now it's all about we just got to protect the American position. And as a result, that's why you're seeing America's becoming more insular. America's becoming more isolationist. It's becoming more unilateral. And what Iran has done is humiliated them. What Iran has done is, look, we are going to stand up and we're going to stand up against you, against any attack on us. And America in the end had to capitulate. America had to make a decision in the end. Do we lose lots of servicemen? Do we get humiliated? Or do we cut a deal and maybe live to fight another day? And that's what they've done. You know, 20 years ago, after the Cold War, this will never, they wouldn't, I mean, anyone that was around in the 1990s would never have thought within 20 years, within a quarter of a century, the American empire would be in this position. But that's where they are.
Talking about visionaries, do you think Donald Trump can save the American empire?
Now, if we look at Donald Trump, we can compare with someone because similarities are actually really surprising. Donald Trump is in the same position Mikhail Gorbachev of the USSR was in 1985. In 1985, decline and malaise was everywhere in the Soviet Union. And what the Communist Party did, they turned to a slightly youngish outsider called Mikhail Gorbachev in the hope that he would bring something new. The Americans, they turned to a complete outsider, reality TV star, in the hope that he could save America. The first thing Mikhail Gorbachev did was he took the Soviet Union out of the Afghan war. He brought it to an end. That's exactly what Trump did. He was the one that agreed the deal with the Taliban, the peace deal, and it was Biden who then implemented it. The other thing Gorbachev had to deal with is he wanted to maintain the Soviet bloc, but the call for Russia first nationalism was only growing. And we see the exact same thing taking place in America. Make America great again. MAGA is what? Forget the empire. We need to put America first. So 1985, Gorbachev came in. 1989, the Berlin Wall came down. And within 2 years, the Soviet Union was gone. The Soviet Union wasn't invaded. There was no nuclear strike. The Soviets themselves dissolved the Soviet Union. They had lost hope in it. And this history doesn't bode well for Trump. So Trump, you know, he came in, I'm going to save America. He's put tariffs on the world, hasn't fought them through. He's gone to war with Iran, didn't think it through. The relationship with Israel now is teetering into a major problem. In fact, the view in Washington, it was Israel that took America to war. So no, I don't think Trump can save the empire. I don't really think anyone can save the empire. Because what is the empire? The empire is we maintain our global position. We maintain our hegemonic position. We maintain our position as being the power. Now, that's only possible if everybody believes in what the empire stands for. They sign up to it and they believe it's good for them. Forget the world believing that. The Americans don't believe in that anymore. And, you know, I would say again, all empires go through this. all empires go through, what is the point of having an empire when it can't help the indigenous people? And that's where America is. So yeah, if history is any lesson, this doesn't bode well for America.
Final question, Adnan. What comes after the US?
So potentially there's a couple of things. There's a lot of talk about a multipolar world, so we don't have one singular hegemonic power. What you have is multiple powers. So obviously China is potentially looking like one of them. You've got Russia. If you look at the Middle East now, you know, America's position there is looking quite precarious. I think the Europeans are finished. I can't really see the role the Europeans are going to play in the broader world. And then finally, look, you have 2 billion Muslims in the world. The Muslims have been under the cosh with American power. Prior to that, it was the European colonists. However, you see the Islamic sentiment, you see the sentiment when it comes to Palestine, you see to them adhering to their faith and their values. So there is a possibility of the Muslim world finally breaking free, establishing a nation which unifies the Muslim world, and they're able to live by their own values. So this is probably a podcast on its own, really, of potentially what can come. But I think these are all the possibilities, you know, from the short term to the long term.
Fantastic. Adnan, thank you so much for your time today. To our listeners, if you want to learn more about the issues that were raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolity.com, which is all one word. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you will find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Imran. Thanks for listening.